Καλησπέρα, καλημέρα, καληνύχτα. No matter where in this wild, wacky and sometimes wonderful world you might be, thank you for making the Highbury Squad part of your day. It's a new week. It's a blank canvas. It's time to tell stories and paint Arsenal pictures. Is it over? I don't think so. We've got some phenomenal folks in the house to talk all things Gunners and a couple of other bits and bobs. Let's rock and roll, kids.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.
Hello, squaddies. Good evening. We'll get to this picture a little bit later on when we're talking about trust the process. Has it led to progress and will it lead to success? Let's introduce our amazing guests this evening. Joining me and subbing late, Super Kev is having a rest and David Hillier had a bit of a 911 or a 999, as they say in England. And back is one of my wingmen on Highbury Squad, ex-Luton Town manager, Mr. Paul Buckle in the house. Bosh, welcome, Paul.
Cheers, Soph.
See, Big Ben's chiming for you guys. Also, one of my favourite Arsenal podcasters, the voice of reason for every season, Latte Firm's guru, FK in the house. Welcome, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, Sophie. Hello to everybody watching.
I'm giving the Super Kev celebration greeting here for everybody. And the guy on the bottom right doesn't need much of an introduction. In my opinion, he's the goat of all goats when it comes to sports journalists and writers. Sports Journalist Award, Sports Writer of the Year, Mr. Henry Winter in the house.
Hi, Sophie. Thanks very much for inviting me. I wish I'd had Big Ben as I went past it yesterday doing the London Marathon. I cannot actually move from this chair, so you've got me for as long as you need me.
So
2 days,
I was
5 days, whatever.
I was going to ask you about that. I saw your video at the finish line. What was your time, Henry?
I just wanted to do it in daylight, Sophie. It's my eighth and my last. I'm 61 and, you know, I'm not an athlete like Paul. And I was just happy. But look, I saw some Arsenal fans along the way and waved to them. And I mean, it was just brilliant. You know what London's like? It's just London like that is at its best. All sort of communities together, all the ages, all the people out together on the streets and raising money and just having a good time. Well, I mean, I had a good time for about the first couple of miles and then it went downhill, literally.
It's an incredible achievement. I worked on a project with Nissan, actually, on Rainbow Row, the cheer zone, to help everyone at that final bit. Worked on that project and really proud to be part of that. And anyone who ran in the London Marathon, my hat's off to you. And Henry, thanks for joining us after such an arduous endeavor yesterday. Right, let's get stuck into it. Good evening, squaddies, everyone in the house. Our chief like officer, Tammy, is here. Be sure to hit the like button. Super Kev is watching, so thanks for all your kind messages, everyone. Yes, FK's in the house too. Perfect guest for today. They sure are. Lots of you in the house from all corners of the earth, the United States, the Czech Republic, Norway, and many, many more. Squaddies, good evening to you. Right, before we get to some Arsenal talk, it would be remiss of me, especially while we have Henry in the house, to not talk about a couple of issues that came up over the weekend and last week. I want to start first with the VAR situation and what happened with Nottingham Forest, Henry. I want to kick off with you. Nottingham Forest statement, which kind of sent the Twitter sphere into a tizzy and the football world into a tizzy, to the point where Gary Neville was asking for Mark Clattenburg to resign his position. What's your take on what's happened? Obviously, at least two of the three I thought were penalties, but what's happened since, Henry? What's your take on this situation?
I just think if you've got a very passionate owner, and you know, he will let rip on things. I can't believe it was an innocent admin who was putting stuff like that out. It must have come from high up for a tweet as toxic as that. I thought it was immature, irresponsible. I thought a club of Nottingham Forest stature, two-time European champions should be above that. I thought it would have been actually cuter if they'd said, listen, there's clearly a problem with refereeing and officiating and VAR in this country, and calling on the other Premier League clubs who feel aggrieved. And if you talk to people at Wolves, you talk to people at Burnley, you talk to people at Everton, they've had issues with VAR this season. They've been wronged. But to impugn an official's integrity is just ridiculous. And you undermine your argument. As you say, two of the three were probably penalties. So I think if they'd actually just said, right, we need a summit meeting of all the clubs to actually look at what is wrong with VAR to try and improve the game, rather than throwing an innocent official under the bus, I think that would have been more constructive.
Mm. FK, from a fan perspective, I mean, we've screamed, we've yelled and, you know, thrown things at our television or gotten heated in the stadium in terms of decisions. I think it's affected every single team. From a fan podcaster point of view, if this was our club and we had put out a statement like that, would you be hugely embarrassed?
Yeah, I think so, Sophie, if I'm being brutally honest. When the tweet came out, when the news broke, I couldn't help but feel it was some sort of a joke. You know, I'm not trying to sort of rap here, but I just couldn't believe it. I thought it was maybe like a parody account, like the tweet coming out. It was a direct sort of attack on the officials, and it just felt like sour grapes. Now, I know Nottingham Forest are desperate for survival. They will try and detract from the performances and the results that they've had. But I thought it was, yeah, a little bit classless, a little bit desperate. And I think, you know, you've seen all the sort of outrage about it from all fans, media, and it's not going to end very well for them.
Paul, you've stood on the sidelines as a manager, also when you're playing for Brentford, a lot different now with VAR and having to deal with, you know, the situation and also the consequences. We used to argue in the pub as fans about poor decisions. I'm not sure if VAR gets it more wrong than they do right. In MLS this weekend, we saw referees mic'd up, and I thought it was brilliant to have the referee go to the monitor and then NFL style to have the referee explain, especially for the fans in the stadium, the situation and the result of it and why, I thought worked brilliantly. And once again, MLS, people can say what they want, but they're leading the way in terms of, you know, how we are refereeing the game. What's your take as an ex-manager in particular on what we saw this weekend? And if you were the manager of Nottingham Forest, how would you feel about that statement today?
Well, I totally agree with what Henry said in terms of Forest letting themselves down with their reaction. I thought it was awful reaction, unnecessary. Nuno's, I thought, was excellent, considering he was right there on the end of what was terrible decisions. So they're two separate things. Poor from Forest, good from Nuno, but the decisions were shocking. The worry for me, Sub, is that we've got referees on the pitch and referees or ex-referees up top, and they can't get it right. I say this with the greatest respect. Not always the referees and managers and players see eye to eye. It's a fact. And this is a reason why there's a lack of respect there at times where we don't get an explanation. And I've been on the end of that as a manager, where it's a flippant approach to it. And it's serious. Every game is serious. The game's getting bigger and bigger, and we want correct decisions, and they weren't correct decisions. And to hear, you know, Dermot Gallagher talking about there was contact, you know, when Young hits the back of Reina's leg, there's contact, it's a penalty. I mean, nobody would have complained if he would have given that. The handball situation for me is a mess because it stopped the ball, his arms are not down the side of him, right? It's out. We can talk about it, it's natural. And the last one, I mean, if you can't get that right, there's an argument, you know, that you're not an expert in your profession, because that was blatant penalty. And I don't know how he hasn't seen that from a comfortable armchair. So it's two separate things, but it's really not good enough. And lastly, like looking at it from, say, if you look at it from Arsenal, City and Liverpool now, Everton go into that game a completely different animal now in that derby to what they probably would have been if it had been a draw or a loss. Right? It can be a little bit more carefree now, in my professional opinion.
Henry, can I get your take too on the Neville comments? because as irresponsible as Nottingham Forest have been, is it fair to say, and maybe it's fair or foul on my part here, is it fair then to say to have Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher commentating on Liverpool and Manchester United matches, or any player commentating on their ex-club, you know, playing? Can they have an influence just as much when they're commentating? I'm not suggesting that they do, but especially when something goes to VAR, they could say something. Does it influence a decision or not? Probably not. But what's your take on his comments and how responsible they are, and whether or not you think ex-players should be commentating on their former clubs?
I think they should absolutely be commentating on whichever clubs that they want to. And the fact that they play for high-profile clubs, they're brilliant pundits, they're clearly going to be used for those games because of that insight. When you listen to, say, Roy Keane, for example, him on Manchester United is always, you know, it's often back-page news. So, and they're often more critical of a club that they supported than others would be. So, no, I have absolutely no problem with that. But look, they're not going to influence the result, which is what, you know, in game wise, Nottingham Forest are alleging. And where I do agree with Nottingham Forest, and Sophie, you quite rightly said it, because it's the MLS is ahead of us on their application of technology, is the audio should be released. And I've long campaigned for audio to actually be relayed live to fans in the ground. I think it's ridiculous that, well, I mean, it's good that the commentators know early what the decision is going to be, but the audio should be played out. Early this season, I went to see Jacksonville Jaguars play at Wembley, and it was just great sitting there with some American friends listening to. I'm not an expert, nowhere near an expert. I know very little about the sort of, you know, the laws of gridiron, but it was actually, the game was easier to understand because when decisions were being made, the audio was out there, you could hear it. And I don't see why the most important people in the grounds, along with the managers and the players, who are the fans, who are the lifeblood of the game, that they're not treated but with more respect by IFAB, because it's an IFAB decision not to allow the audio. We can whack PGMOL and have web as much as we want, but it's an IFAB issue. And the FA, and I think probably PGMO, would like IFAD to actually allow an element, or, you know, the audio to be run. They're worried about building the referees up almost into celebrities, but the fact is they're being targeted now, so a little bit more intelligence on either side.
Yeah, all right, good stuff on that, and totally agree with all of you. I don't know if Forrest, do you think Forrest will get slapped with a big fine here? Do you think there's going to be consequences for them?
Huge consequences. I mean, you can't go around impugning an official's reputation, pedigree. I think there's another element in this, is that because Anthony Taylor was the man in the middle, I sometimes feel that VAR, because you've got huge names in the middle, Anthony Taylor's our number one referee, followed by Michael Oliver, that they don't want to question them. I think that's an issue that's been slightly ignored in all this.
FK, real quick before we go, because some of the squaddies in chat are asking, is it time to have referees do interviews after the game, or does that just bring up bigger issues?
It'd be nice to hear from a ref, but I don't think that would be top of my order. I think, like Henry's just said, you know, a bit of transparency during the game. You know what it's like as a season ticket holder. I go to the games, and when the VAR goes on screen, you have no idea what's going on. For me, it ruins a spectacle. For me, I go to football to lose myself in that moment. And every time there's a goal, you know, you can't really celebrate. You can't really let yourself go because you're just worried it might get pulled up for one action or another. So there's lots of other things that I would put above the pecking order of, you know, what I'd like changed in the game. And yeah, it'd be nice to hear the refs. But again, you know, how much are they going to be willing to say? How much are they going to really want to talk about after a game? What would it genuinely achieve apart from riling up the fans who maybe didn't get the decision that they wanted in a match?
Yeah, I think it opens up Pandora's box and creates maybe referees as even bigger targets. So, yeah. Okay, another big decision in football that came last week. We hadn't had a chance to talk about it on the show yet, and I was very upset about this, as were many, many clubs and fans, is the decision to scrap replays for the FA Cup. Paul, this is a competition that you've played and managed in. I love the FA Cup. I loved it since I was a kid. I especially loved it when I'd sit in front of my telly on the BBC and watch it from morning until night, getting to see players on the coach, leaving the hotel. I'm not sure if the influx of, you know, I love change and I love, you know, how foreign managers and players have elevated our game so beautifully. But also at times, I just don't think they understand the history of the FA Cup. What's your take on scrapping the replays, what it means for smaller clubs? Financially, it's debilitating for them. When you see especially what Coventry did against Manchester United yesterday, it's the personification of what makes the Cup so special. What's your take on that?
Well, I think it's a disaster for the EFL and the lower league clubs. I never knew the magnitude of it from a fiscal point of view until I was a manager. When I was an assistant to Alex Inglethorpe at Exeter, we drew with United at United in 2005, I believe, and we got them back and it saved the club. It literally saved our club. We was on the brink of administration, which Torquay United is now. That saved us. Every year, so as a manager at Torquay, it would be in the boardroom the 4 years I had there, and the 11 consortium members wanted to talk about the FA Cup, okay, and ways of bringing in revenue, because it was a case of me trying to do everything humanly possible to get through to the rounds, right, to try to get the bigger teams. The TV comes with it, and I saw the numbers involved. You know, that was a big part of my job at Torquay. To do that, because it you know, it could keep the club afloat for years. So I think it's terrible. With Luton, we beat Wolves at home, we beat Norwich away, and even at the time, Luton being a big club, then finances were put into the training ground because we made a lot of money with that run. I think it's terrible. I think for the game, for the players that get the opportunity, you know, to play at somewhere like Old Trafford, you work all your life for something like that to come along, and then to see the big teams coming down, you know, to an Exeter City and seeing our dressing rooms and, you know, the growth of the game, everything about it. I mean, it's a shame, a real shame.
Henry, you've covered, I don't know how many FA Cups from start to finish. I know you're passionate about this one. What's your take on this decision, the consequences overall?
It's disastrous. It's naive. It shows who runs the game in this country, which is the four or five elite Premier League clubs, because that's what this is about. This is about the Champions League clubs and the expansion of the Champions League season into January by UEFA. And the FA should have stood up to the Premier League. They should have stood up to UEFA. They should have protected not only the FA Cup, but effectively what is the whole of the pyramid. I mean, I remember, Paul, it seems like only yesterday, that game in 2005 when Scott Hiley was nutmegging Cristiano Ronaldo, when I think it was 1-0 till about 7 minutes from time, when Wayne Rooney scored a goal, and all your fans, the Exeter fans at St James's Park, were singing, "We're going to win 3-2. That's what the Cup's about. And it's, you know, and it was a formative experience for Ronaldo and Rooney, who were young at the time, and it helped them develop, going into that ground, going into that atmosphere, proving themselves. And Ferguson looked at them and thought, right, these guys have got the cojones to actually deal with environments like that. I mean, Exeter, you know, you've mentioned all these teams. They are so important. We've been through COVID. We've seen what's happened to Bury. We've seen the sort of the issues in the game and why a regulator is coming in to protect the game a little bit more. So, and then you just see what Coventry did at the weekend and how important it was. And in a month or so time, Gareth Southgate is going to announce his 26 for the Euros. I would say at least 3/4 of the players he picked owed part of their education to the EFL, and probably a couple to non-league as well, if Nick Pope gets in the squad, if he's fit enough. So, look, the pyramid matters, and the FA, just, it was disgraceful, their behaviour on that. And it was no surprise they had to put a statement out the next day. But also, we've been talking a lot about transparency and consultation. There clearly wasn't enough consultation with the clubs outside the Premier League. So, yeah, absolute disaster from the FA.
FK, it's a competition that we have excelled in, won it more than anybody. Arsenal fans love the FA Cup. I know you do too. We've seen some players shine given those opportunities. Like Henry said, you know, talking about the Ronaldos and the Roonies of the world. as a fan, you upset about this one?
Yeah, very. Listening to, you know, both Paul and Henry talk about the importance of them. Look, I understand on the one side, we want fewer fixtures for the top clubs, top players. Manchester City made no secret of the sort of day extra that they could have had before their after their Champions League game. I understand all of that. But for me, replays, Soph, are one of the most romantic things about the FA Cup.
Mm.
You know, to get a fixture, and if a team gets a draw, if we get a draw, to then have it back at our gaff, or to go somewhere gnarly, somewhere unknown on a Tuesday or a Wednesday night. That's another thing that I don't like about the having this sort of FA Cup fixtures over a weekend. But like, just doing that trip, it means everything to supporters. It's so nice to go to grounds outside of your own, especially when the underdog could claim, you know, that draw. And, you know, you look back at our FA Cup history, this is a pretty sad memory, but I think the famous night at Villa Park back in 99,
mm.
you know, Vieira giving the ball away to Giggs. I mean, that was, still is, one of the most iconic matches in FA Cup history. And that was a replay. And there are so many other replay shouts that we could probably go through. But for me, I think it kills a certain element of the romance of the FA Cup. And it's a real shame to see them go.
Totally agree. And I'm not sure, Henry, if this is going to be overturned at all. Just real quick, if you can wrap it up for us. Do you think there's any chance they'll renege on this decision?
No, I mean, the FA are so enthralled to the Premier League. They've got Wembley to pay off. We know who runs the game. I just think it's incredibly arrogant that the Premier League is even influencing fixtures that they wouldn't even play in anyway. I mean, how on earth can they say that the first and second rounds of the FA Cup, there should be no replays? There's no Premier League clubs in there until the third round anyway.
Yeah. Tragic.
Also, what Henry said there about players, I mean, spot on. It's also coaches, because Alex Inglethorpe's now at Liverpool and he's bringing all the players through. He wouldn't have probably got that opportunity if he hadn't have done so well. And his stock went up with that Manchester United game, which then, you know, got interest from Tottenham, spent 10 years at Tottenham with John McDermott, great work there, and then Liverpool. So thinking outside the box like that, what Henry said, is just made me think, you know, Ollie Watkins, Exeter City, Exeter have been a conveyor belt. For these clubs, and as things have gone as well, we've not always got the compensation that we've wanted. We were lucky to have someone like Steve Perriman that would stand up, as Henry says, and would stand up and wouldn't let the clubs just come in and take, you know, players that had come through our system.
We all love our football, and the evolution of football is great. You know, technology, the ability to see a game, the fact that it's a 365-day business now, but sometimes I wonder if that's a good or bad thing. I mean, you look at, you know, teams announcing pre-season tours like 4 days after, I think, Newcastle are going to Australia. So it's this hypocrisy as well where it doesn't sit well with me and a dozen other fans and journalists as well. It's kind of, it's sad. I understand money's important, but money just seems to be superseding every single decision now, and the heart of the game, if we're not careful, is going to be lost. So anyway, let's move on to some Arsenal talk. I'm really excited to get Henry's take on the Arsenal, the outsider-insider perspective, and of course, the ex-manager and fellow podcaster here. I, for one, have been loving this season, and I wanted to put this picture up. Thanks, Chemo FC, for putting this together. Title of the show is Trust the Process. Has Mikel Arteta taken the process to progress, and will that lead to success? When you look at kind of the team that he inherited, you look at this image, and, you know, some Arsenal fans have been throwing their toys out the pram this week, Henry, in terms of another April meltdown suggestion. Well, the month isn't over just yet. When you look at what he's had to do, reinvent the club, the culture, I was definitely critical of Mikel Arteta when he first took over. Kev always said to me, "So if it's the players, wait until he has a team of players that he's brought in." And I've always felt like a team becomes the image of their manager, you know, from Pep Guardiola to Jurgen Klopp. These are managers that build teams in their image and their personality. Do you feel, Henry, that process has led to progress, and can you see success at the end of the tunnel for Arsenal under Mikel Arteta?
Yes, absolutely. And I've been saying it from the word go, because when he got the job, I spoke to one or two people at Manchester City, one or two of the players, Raheem Sterling in particular. And I said, why is this guy a good? Because obviously he was assistant to Pep Guardiola. Why is he good? And Sterling was very upfront and just said, he just makes you better. I'm very... Paul would understand this far more than I would, but about sort of technical things, about how an attacking wide player like Sterling, rather than chewing the ball a little bit, taking an extra touch, he flowed a bit more. And that was obviously because he's got Pep there, but also because Mikel worked with him on an individual basis. So that knowledge of the game, that tactical, technical influence that he has on players was clearly the hallmark of someone who would go on. Then there are all the other things you have to acquire as a manager, dealing with the media, managing up, dealing with overseas owners, dealing with recruitment, which is key. Have you then got the people skills as well? And I think Arteta, clearly he is evolving, he is developing, but I just think that anyone who has seen him at close quarters, who's spoken to people and realised that this is a man on a mission who knows what he wants, is exactly what Arsenal needed at the time. In a way, he was slightly unfortunate, and you will tell me if I was wrong, but I think when he won the FA Cup, it wasn't, I think it wasn't it during games behind closed doors, and there was a limit on the number of fans who could go. So the fans didn't have that collective experience of seeing an Arteta team win at Wembley, that sort of iconic moment. I think, look, there are individual issues. I don't think he rotates enough. Maybe the squad's not deep enough. I'm a huge admirer of Declan Rice and have been covering and interviewing him since he was sort of breaking through at West Ham. I just think Declan Rice is the type of player, as you saw in the game at the weekend when he was demanding the ball deep into injury time, but I just think he'll need a break at some point. I mean, I think he's been a fantastic signing for his character, for his humour, for his ability on the pitch, for his ability to play slightly deeper or more attacking, depending whether Jorginho or Partey's playing. I think he's a fabulous player and I think he's a future captain. But I just think players like him and Odegaard and Gabriel and Saliba, I think they're one or two games maybe earlier in the season, you'd know better than I would, you know, like PSV, you know, this sort of effectively the dead rubber game when Arsenal already guaranteed a top spot. Maybe the Newcastle 4-1 game that Arteta could have sort of taken, rested or rotated some players rather than pushing them through the 90 minutes. But these are quibbles. He's a terrific manager. He is up against Klopp. He's up against Pep Guardiola. These are greats of the modern era. And he is taking them on. Last time I looked, okay, City have got the game in hand. But Arsenal are top with a fantastic superior goal difference. They're playing good football. I take all the sort of, you know, is there a plan B and all that. But look, you're 5 goals short of 100 goals in all competitions this season. Faisal, tell me if I'm wrong. So if you tell me that I'm wrong. But, you know, you're scoring. And this is one criticism I've had all season. And I'll have all the sort of, you know, the Havertz friends sort of throw stats at me. But I still think you need number 9. I think if you bought Ivan Toney, if you've gone and given Brentford 100 million in January, I think it would have just been good. But look, Havertz has played well. Does he kill and score against the big teams? I don't know. But look, Odegaard's playing fabulous football under Arteta, as is Declan Rice.
Faisal, I'm just going to let you riff off what Henry said here. There's a lot to dissect. And, you know, it was definitely... I just felt like with the Champions League meltdown afterwards, people mistook Bayern Munich and their pedigree in the competition versus their form in Bundesliga. And I also thought it was quite disrespectful considering the insane season Bayer Leverkusen are having. What's your take? Do you feel like we're in the middle of an April meltdown? I know you're a fan of Mikel. What do you think?
We're only ever one defeat away from a meltdown, right? Listen, first of all, when you hear someone like Henry Winter, who has covered the game over the years that you have, Henry, and watched, you know, great teams of the past, and you are here, you know, sort of listening to you say that Arsenal are top and we're 5 goals away from scoring 100 in all competitions and that Mikel Arteta is taking us on this journey. And it's just music to my ears. It feels so good. And we've waited so long for this project to just go bang. For me, Soph, it's really simple. I think Mikel Arteta is a fantastic coach. He has shown in his short time at Arsenal that he is learning. He continues to evolve, and that's a really, really encouraging thing for us. I think we are the second or third youngest squad in the Premier League, and to have two back-to-back title races now and to be upset about not getting into the semi-finals of the Champions League, like, I mean, that's insane what he's done. And you talked earlier about the culture and the environment and the, everything that Mikel had to sort of reset, recalibrate when he first joined the club. This has been a steep upward trajectory. It is clear for everybody to see, and people that are moaning or people that are being critical of Arteta can, especially when you consider who we're up against, you know, the charges and Manchester City and all their funds and the players and manager and Liverpool have been fantastic over the last 7-8 years. Like, only the ignorant are really sort of, you know, fail to recognize what Mikel Arteta is doing at Arsenal. So look, I'm really happy. There's lots of things to be encouraged about. There are one or two things that I think Arteta will accept. He doesn't rotate as well as he could, as Henry's just said. I think left eight is a problem for us. You know, we're trying to put square pegs into round holes. We've tried Havertz there. We've tried Smith-Rowe there. He doesn't fancy Fabio Vieira there. I think Granit Xhaka was fantastic in that position last season, and Martinelli's really missed that. Left back has been really unfortunate. Zinchenko's good in certain games. Tomiyasu just can't stay fit. Timber, of course, who's just scored a wonder goal tonight. You know, what a player he would have been for us. So, look, there are things that Mikel can absolutely take from this season. I love how you're doing this all the live still. Fantastic. I'm taking notes, Sophie. I'm taking notes. But no, honestly, look, I could be happier. We could be champions. But honestly, what Mikel is doing, it's really clear. It's a very steep upward trajectory, and I'm so excited about what the future years have to bring.
Yeah. Paul, we've often talked this season, and more so than I think last season I was like this, but this season more than ever, I'm enjoying the journey versus focusing too much on the destination. You know, there's no doubt we all want to win the Premier League. The Champions League, I think, was one of those bonus moments for us this season. But to get to the quarterfinals was a massive achievement. I don't think it was a failure. We were just beaten by a juggernaut and a team, like I said, that has more heritage than us. As a manager, I know you admire Mikel Arteta. If anything, one of the things maybe that did he tinker too much in April? Did he shoehorning Zinchenko back in, moving Havertz from the nine into the midfield? Are these his mistakes, or was it a case of players just not being ready mentally? What is your take?
Well, Henry nicked some of my stats there. I had some things written down, but that was just low hanging fruit. I think he did make mistakes. I think you can, as a manager, and again, I've said this a number of times, he hasn't the experience of the other two. He hasn't got it. There's only so much you can learn as an assistant. And the manager dictates that. Whichever manager you're under, you know, what he delegates to you. Henry said there about, I would imagine Arteta is excellent on the field at details. That's the way the guy is. Managing is different to being the assistant. I think he needs time for sure. And I think you have a really top manager on your hands. And it would be crazy for the Arsenal fans to go against him. I think you've got to run with this. You're up against two top, top managers, two huge clubs with huge budgets. I don't think you have the squad that City have. You know, when you look at Grealish coming in for Doku, I don't see that at Arsenal. That I don't see that chemistry there in the squad. So I think the recruitment is big. I think when you become a manager, as Henry said, managing up, where you take your time, you know, the energy bucket that you've got, your time management becomes really important of where you actually spend your time. And I think that would be something for Mikel, I would imagine, to work out, okay, what he needs around him. Klopp, you know, his rotation of the midfield against Fulham is a perfect example of sort of knowing what you want, right? So with this high-pressing game that they all play, it takes energy and it takes legs. And if you're in that midfield area, that's where the energy comes, because once the strikers go, the midfield jump on to latch on. If it works, great. If it doesn't, you go back the other way. You know, it's real high intensity. And I think City, and I think Pep's very good at it, he's shown it over the years, can rotate much more. If you're a manager and you haven't got the squad, you're torn, because you're saying to yourself, you know, if I put this player in, you know, I'm going to get less quality. He's going to be fresh, but I'm going to get less quality. So I think he might have had that problem. But again, once you're actually in the chair, it is different because you have to cope with the pressure. You have to recover from losses. Every manager recovers different. Them type of things, when you're in the building, doesn't matter what level you're at, you've got to deal with them as a manager. And I think he just needs time, because he's right there on the same points. Henry said about the goals, not easy to beat those two on goals at this stage of the season with the firepower they've got. So I don't think it's over. And I also think that Liverpool and City, they're not in such a great place as it would look. I still think there's some turnarounds to go in this season. And I know my wife's really hoping that it goes to the wire. But yeah, I still think Arsenal are right there, and I'm still going to back them to win it.
Rebecca must have loved that 5-2 yesterday. Yes. Yeah, could see her and Teddy enjoying that. Henry, I know this might be an unfair question to ask if Mikel Arteta is a closer, and maybe you can only be a closer when you've won a big one. The FA Cup, some fans say he inherited Emery's team, still had to go on and win it. There were still a lot of games to be played to go win that FA Cup. And then we talk about success in the modern game. And, you know, some people already, I noticed Andy and Darren on TalkSport this morning were asking the question, of course, if Manchester United win the FA Cup and Arsenal go trophyless, is that more of a successful season? What's your take on how success is measured if you see Mikel being a closer at Arsenal?
Being totally cynical and saying that we live in a world of FFP, PSR, Arsenal getting into the Champions League or staying in the Champions League is honestly, for most clubs, they would just go, that's absolutely perfect, because it's, what, 100, 120 million, probably even more next season. So that is huge. The FA Cup's probably worth, I don't know, 5-6 million. But for me, the game is all about trophies. The game is all about silverware. And I think it's absolutely vital that he actually trains on and nails down this trophy. Because what are we? It's the 20th anniversary of the Invincibles this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, the football they played, the quality of the individuals. But it has to be about silverware. So that's important. But, you know, he knows that. I mean, all these things we're saying, he is a very driven man. You don't get to the top of any professional, particularly something as competitive as football, any sport, without being an absolutely driven individual. And he is completely that. So he will be working absolutely overtime to get this. And he's up against, as you say, two juggernauts.
Sometimes I think it's unfair to even, like you said earlier, Henry, like to measure Arteta against Klopp and Pep. And FK, as fans, I think we do that now because, you know, that's the level that we've kind of reached. Of course, we haven't reached Manchester City's level, but just two seasons ago, we were talking about Brighton and teams like that being our rivals in terms of just being able to win those games. The Arteta Out Brigade, I just think, are mental. And even I saw the light like a season and a half ago. You can't deny what's happening at our club. But if he doesn't win the Premier League this season, should there be more pressure on him? I don't think there will be. I think the Cronkies are perfectly happy with Mikel. And, you know, when you look and see, when you look at Manchester United's mighty fall, how many managers they've been through since losing a legendary manager. We lost Arsene Wenger, but you would argue his last 10 years weren't that great anyway. The FA Cups mask a lot of our problems. How do you feel about Mikel measuring success? Does he have to win soon? And if he doesn't, should he be under more pressure?
Listen, firstly, I love days out at Wembley, and they have given me some of the most memorable moments of my life, memorable memories of my life, right? Where we've won the cup at Wembley so many years, so many times. But I think you need to look at the circumstances that you find your club in. Henry mentioned it's 20 years since the Invincibles. We've not been at the top table for a long time. And I think you just need to look at the journey and look at the progress that we're making. And, you know, this is now the second year, as I've just said, back-to-back sort of title challenges. And this challenge feels better, you know, stronger, more sustainable than last season, of course. And, you know, we still may not win it, and we still may sort of fall flat on our faces and finish third. But I just want to see that continual development, Soph. Like, next year, I want us to go again. And next year, I want us to have a stronger squad, you know, get beyond that 14-15 that Mikel Arteta trusts, get to 17-18 and maybe go stronger in some of the domestic competitions. I completely accept that there are proportions of any fan base that are going to want silverware, that are going to want those days out. For a lot of our fans, you know, they've not really experienced too much of that. Yeah, you know, there are Arsenal fans that are, you know, well into their sort of like late teens, early 20s that have not really experienced a title winning team. And I can't comprehend that because I've been around. So like, I get it. I get the hunger is there and everybody wants success tomorrow. But again, to the point that the points that the chaps have made, the standards are high. The margins are so fine. And when you think about how long Pep and Klopp have been in the game and how long they've spent in, how much money they've spent in building these squads and these challenges, to be where we are today with such a young squad is phenomenal, and it's going to come. So I don't even want to talk about like Mikel not winning trophies. I mean, it might happen. So if it might be 5 years that we just can keep competing in titles and we just fall short. But if, as long as we're competitive, as long as we're going strong in domestic cups, that's, you know, you just want to be in it. You just want to be competing. Mm. And that for me is a measure of success.
Paul, we talk about some of the bold decisions that he's made when you look at this team and how he kind of turned around what he inherited. No disrespect to Emery, who's doing a phenomenal job at Aston Villa. I've been a huge fan of his, you know, from him before coming to the Premier League. You know, where I changed my mind about Mikel Arteta was the Aubameyang situation. I thought that was decisive and correct, and it just kind of went on from there. You know, removing Ozil from the dressing room, who kind of thought that he was the be-all and end-all of the club. There's one decision that he's made that you and I have talked about a lot. I didn't agree with at all at the start. But can we also say now that some of his decision-making has worked out, does the David Raya situation now, has he proven to you, I know that you're a huge Ramsdale fan, and even up until the last time we spoke a couple of weeks ago, you weren't sure if that was the best decision. But when you look at the clean sheets, how he's been able to improve the team playing out the back, Ramsdale was a character that we all fell in love with because he came in at a time where we changed the culture of our club. Do you think that now we can put this argument to bed? Are you on board with David Raya? I know you, with your connections at Brentford, you've seen and known and play and you know of David and on and off the pitch. And he seems to be not only, you know, good for the dressing room, but also it seems like some Arsenal fans actually are questioning him still.
Mm. No, I think it's been a great signing. I think as a manager, I know the squads are huge now, right? So if I look at it from when I was putting teams together, maybe 22 players, you would try to get those two players in the positions as close as you could, you know, with the competency levels needed. And I think that's the next step for Arsenal. I think to do that in every position, okay? So, you know, to build the squad and what he's got now, you know, like the two centre-backs, the goalkeeper, Rice in front, you know, it's a very strong core of a team he's got. He just needs more depth in it. And if he gets it, I think not only will he win it, because he will win it. If Arsenal stick with him, he'll win the Premier League, because everything's timing as well in management. You know, when you take over a good team, as Luton, I took over a good team, good staff, right? They're settled now. He's got them there. They're winning games. They're playing great football. They're right there. And he's done a lot of groundwork at the club. So continuity, we know it works. We know that. So I hope they stick with him. And I think not only will he win one, he's got the type of personality of like a Pep that will want to go again, and a Klopp. And Klopp's obviously leaving. You've got, I don't know how long Pep's got on him. I don't see that being long-term at City. So it's right there for him to go and dominate his profession as a manager and win things with Arsenal, I think. But the recruitment in the summer, if they don't do it this year, even if they do it this year, the recruitment to build on the signings that they've made, like Rice, great signing. Can the recruitment people go and find that type of player in other positions to really build a great squad?
Henry, we often talk about, by the way, real quick, I'd love your take because obviously you cover England and Ramsdale is a player that some feel like who should already be, have ousted Pickford as England's number one. We know Pickford's been great for Gareth Southgate in England. Are you a fan of David Raya?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I understand the sort of the reasons. I felt a bit for Ramsdale, partly the way it was done. It can't be pleasant. Ramsdale's England's number two. I mean, there is a gap between him and Jordan Pickford, England's number one. And that's, Pickford, his personality, he'll probably take a penalty for England at some point, Edison style in the Euros. He's never let England down, his personality, everything about him. But Ramsdale's England's number two. I don't think there's any dispute of that. I mean, it's interesting to see what he does next because he's too good to be on the bench.
What do you think Arsenal's biggest threat of success is? Paul mentioned Klopp is leaving. We don't know what Liverpool are going to look like next season. Pep Guardiola, for as long as he's at Manchester City, he will continue to be the best. Is there a team that might rise next season that you feel? David Hillier said on our show a couple of weeks ago, after going so close last season and going close this season, he fears that there might be a drop-off next season if we don't win the Premier League. What's your take on that? And which team do you think could be Arsenal's biggest threat that has been poor this season that might rise next?
Just on David's point, I think that if Arsenal go out and spend big on the type of players that they need, i.e. a number nine, you're saying a left eight as well, and maybe some support for Rice in deep midfield, particularly if Partey leaves. But I think the most important team for Arsenal is going to be the Premier League's team of lawyers, because I think if they... They're building this case against Manchester City, the 115 charges. Manchester City deny everything. Pep Guardiola is adamant. Whenever he gets asked about it in press conferences, he is absolutely convinced that City have done nothing wrong. As I say, City deny everything. But I think at some point that case, those cases, and it's unfortunate there's so many of them. I think if it was four or five, it would have been sort of dealt with by now. I just think that's going to be so significant. I mean, look, if City come out of it, fine, then they'll just continue to steamroll, and people will probably celebrate by going and buying another outstanding player for sort of 70, 80 million. So I think that is important. I mean, it's interesting about Liverpool, whether they have a dip post-Klopp. It depends who they get in. If they can get in a Ruben Amorim type, then that energy might sort of drive them on again. But you wouldn't be surprised if Liverpool had a slight dip next season, particularly maybe if Mo Salah leaves as well. Obviously, Virgil van Dijk is playing so well again. So I just think Arsenal need to build. They need to hold their nerve. I mean, whenever you see those videos, Josh seems to have a good relationship with Arteta. Arteta is sort of popular within the building. So I think there's 100% support for him there. They just need to back him. And he seems to work well with Edu. So if they recruit the right, I think that momentum will continue regardless of how they finish the season.
Building FK is really important. I think we've done a really good job of that. I mean, everyone poo-pooed the Havertz signing, but we stood by him from the beginning on this show and felt like he would come good. Declan Rice, a great signing. You go to Trossard the previous January, really good signing. Jurrien Timber, we don't know how he's going to be, but comes back, scores a great goal. But it's very different playing in the under-23s versus, playing against the big guns in the Premier League. I don't know who you think is our most important player or how we build around the Salibas of the world. Declan Rice has just been, and I think his ceiling is so high. If we win big trophies, I think Declan's the type of player that could be a future Ballon d'Or winner. Don't at me, Arsenal fans. This is what I believe. Martin Odegaard, thanks to Can't Draw Arsenal for this picture from the weekend, continues to just prove his importance. A player who's dipped a little bit when we've needed him the most in the last couple of games has been Bukayo Saka. Do you believe that Bukayo is our most important player? I wanted to ask also, is he becoming a little bit like Ozil, can't get dropped? There's the Foden comparisons. Foden's just been on fire this season. What's your take on our most important player and Saka in terms of being big in those moments where we need him to be the biggest?
I think the first thing is, Soph, is that we've got such a good number of core players in that first 11 that if any one of them were to be missing, you'd be really upset. If Saliba goes missing, it's disaster. If Gabriel goes missing, disaster. If Saka goes missing, disaster. So I think there's a core group of players that are almost irreplaceable. Just on Bukayo, I don't like the language that people use when they sort of say, you know, he's sort of flat and he's not delivering the numbers as he was. He's carried us largely for a long time. His output has been so phenomenal that we are getting accustomed to those levels of output as Arsenal fans. And when he doesn't score, it's like shock horror. We also forget that he's played in the World Cup and he's not having much of a break and he's playing week in, week out. And that's something that Mikel's got to address. There's not much beyond him. You know, we've got Reece in the squad. We've got Fabio Vieira, Smith Rowe, one or two others that maybe could play, but just don't play. For me, the building has to continue and it's just about raising the floor. You know, so the ceiling of this team is really high. I've just reeled off a few players that aren't getting any game time, right? Henry mentioned before as well, Thomas Partey, Ramsdale we're going to sell. You know, if we can move on five or six of these players, Eddie Nketiah, that are sort of squad players, fringe players, not giving this team many minutes, and add maybe two or three that challenge that first 11 that can add value as a starter, you're going to get so much more output for that money. So I'm really excited, you know, that we're so well positioned and lots has been talked about in terms of the financials. You know, we're going to have a nice strong budget. Henry talked about the Champions League run. It's going to be really lucrative for us this summer. Our wages seem to be in really good order. We've kept that powder dry, sorry to use that phrase, but it could be a really big summer for us. So I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, at some point, Soph, you know, finally just on this bit, you know, we've got a group of really likable players. It's not going to be easy watching people like Ramsdale go and play for a Chelsea or play for, I think I'm ready to hate him just yet. so we're going to have to get used to making uncomfortable decisions because they are such a likable group of players. And at some point, a player that you like, a player that you idolize, a player that you've got a sentimental attachment to will have to leave the club and you'll have to kind of just get over it. So I'm excited. And I think this build is just going to continue, but we've got to raise the floor because beyond Martinelli and Saka, there's not much. Beyond Rice, there's not much because Partey's so unreliable. We've seen Jurrien Timber not playing left back and Tomiyasu being in and out that we've had to rely on Kivior, who's a backup defender playing there. You know, what else is there beyond Ben White? So, yeah, I just think squad depth is probably the biggest focus for Mikel Arteta.
Mm. Paul, you've always stood by your conviction that Arsenal will win the league. Is it... Why do people say, like, if we don't win the league, it's a failure? Would you see it this season? Last season, I think it was improbable and we went on this crazy run that no one was expecting. And I think our expectations just went from 0 to 100. If we don't win the league, as an ex-manager looking from the outside in, would you consider it a failure?
Not at all. No. I mean, I'm not just saying give managers time. You know, I do get it. I get that, you know, owners and ownership groups have to make decisions and make change. I just think it's crazy. It would be absolutely ridiculous to even think about changing Mikel Arteta right now. The infrastructure of a club's really important. So for when you're in a club and the relationships you build within the club are really important to the stability. And in the end, like I say, when you do get it right, and I've been in that position where you've got the team you want, you know, you're ready to get promoted, you know, things, it's just a knock-on effect, and trust comes with that. Then there's a big trust that comes, that word then goes out. You know, I think every player would want to play for Pep. You know, he's built that reputation. I think Arteta needs time to build that reputation. He plays a brilliant brand of football. Okay, you talk about, you know, Declan Rice improving. I mean, Arsenal have improved him. You know, he's improved the team, but Mikel's way of playing and the amount they go through the midfield and keep the ball and go from side to side, there's a real identity to Arsenal now and a style of play. And it will just come down, in my opinion, to add into it and supporting him, as Henry said, backing him. Back the manager now. Now's the time to back him and support him. I mean, if he was all on the board now, and I was on the board and I was owning it, you'd probably give him a new contract. Why wouldn't you do that now? And put that out and show the faith, you know, in an industry where the manager always gets sacked. I mean, I get the LMA you know, I work with the LMA and I speak to a load of the members that are out of work. I mean, it's crazy, you know, how often we sack managers in our country. So I really think that there's a lot of great things at Arsenal that he's built, and just let him carry on with that.
Okay, a couple more here before we let everyone go. Henry, I just wanted to get your take. Well, I have you here because I really, in a quick soundbite, because I do want to get your thoughts on tomorrow's game as well. I think Martin Odegaard is an unbelievable player, and I think that this season he's proven to be, for me, not only the best midfielder in the league, I think he's been one of the best players in the league. I'd love your take on Martin Odegaard and what you think his ceiling is and how important he's become to the Arsenal.
I think Arsenal and Arteta has been the making of Odegaard. We saw that talent from a young age at Real Madrid, but he didn't really have the chance, or whatever the situation was, to express it. And you just see he's absolutely blossomed. And I think he gets better season by season, almost game by game at Arsenal. He's, you know, sometimes you would think he would just be floating through games. Now he's absolutely seizing them. His stamina, his almost his physicality, his mental ruggedness, as well as his sort of, you know, physically withstands things more. So technical, so good to watch. I think he's a leader. I think he's just been outstanding, as you say, one of the players of the year.
Yeah. FK, real quick, are you a big O fan? Oh, you love God.
Mate, what can I say about him? He's just phenomenal. And, you know, to add to Henry's praise, he is the coach on the pitch. And do you know what I love about him, Sophie, so much? His demeanour. Like, everyone talks about Rice being captain because he's so this and vocal and shouty and pointy. Odegaard is a class act. You know, we hear all the stories about him training like a model pro. You see the way he carries himself on the pitch. He's aesthetically so beautiful to watch as a footballer. His connection with the fans, he always has his habit of doing that thing where at the right time, you know, anyone can just do that and get the fans on their feet, but he does it at the right time. And he's becoming so influential. And I said on, you know, I've said on many sort of programs over the past few months, I think he's entered the chat now in terms of like the Cesc Ozil influence and talent. And you know what? He's what, 25, 26? I don't want to start that argument again, but his ceiling is out of sight. Like, he could be so much better. So what a player. What a player.
Yeah, I agree completely. Okay, we've got a big game tomorrow against Chelsea. I have a feeling that Cole Palmer will be fine tomorrow night. It just feels like apparently he has an illness, Henry. He's been sensational this season. My goodness, that has been a great... Of all the supposed duds, I don't think they're duds. I think somehow Chelsea will be better next season. But he's been incredible. If he doesn't play tomorrow, I think most Arsenal fans, we don't wish him ill, but if he misses the game, we won't be too upset. I'll start with you. Chelsea versus Arsenal. They've gotten some decent results against some sides that we thought they'd get, you know, absolutely pummeled by. What's your take on tomorrow's game and another opportunity for us to put more pressure on Manchester City, if they would even feel the pressure?
Have to seize it. And even if Cole Palmer does start, it doesn't sound like he's going to be 100% fit if he's sort of coming back from some sort of illness. But Cole Palmer at 90% is better than the majority of players at 100%. He's been outstanding. I mean, everyone says he's going to win Young Player of the Year. I think he should be in contention for the Senior Player of the Year. He's absolutely carried Chelsea along with Malagusta at right back. So, look, if you can... keep him quiet, you'll win.
Paul, this is a must-win game. Can't afford to lose it. You know, Liverpool, no one really talking about Liverpool after the weekend because, of course, with City having that game in hand now and the 2 points, I can see why. You know, we weren't able to close the deal last season. We were 8 points ahead. But this is a must-win against a Chelsea team that is up and down. What's your take on tomorrow's game?
Well, it is a must-win. For sure, and they'll all become that now. There is no room for error right now with so few games left. So they'll know that. It's how Arsenal handle that pressure. I think the Wolves game was a big test. Not an easy place to go and pick up 3 points. They did it with a clean sheet, if I'm right, as well. So hopefully back to those relationships on the field that they've had in so many games this season, blossoming again against a real disjointed Chelsea team. that you never quite know what you're going to get from them. I think Arsenal need to just look after themselves, look at their own game, not look too much at Chelsea, and go and take the game to them, which I think they will. And I think Arsenal will win the game. I really do. I don't think there's enough at Chelsea right now in terms of quality and togetherness that could beat this Arsenal team.
FK, how do you feel about it?
Huge game. Huge game. You want to be involved in these games. Look, that week that we had, losing at home to Villa, and losing away at Bayern, it was a really tough week for fans, for the players. To recover the way we did on Saturday night, to go to Wolves and put in such a performance, we're back in it again. And fans are talking about putting, you know, the scoreboard pressure. Let's just get the points on the board. Let's beat Chelsea, and let's get Manchester City to, you know, to churn out their results. So just put as much pressure as you can until the final weekend. And I'm excited. Back at the Emirates tomorrow. I can't wait. Can't wait.
Aren't we playing away? Are we away tomorrow?
No, we're at the Emirates.
Are we? I thought we were away. Well, then, you know, it changes everything. Gosh, that's the jet lag. Flying back from Cyprus, that's what it will do to you. Henry,
we drew away, if you remember.
Yeah, they'll kill me if I don't ask you. And it has been a great show with great guests, but just a couple. The squaddies really want to know what your thoughts are on Benjamin White. Quite a few of them have been asking me.
On Ben White?
Yeah.
One of the best right backs in Europe. And not simply as a defender, but the connection that he has with Odegaard and Saka has been absolutely outstanding. The connection with William Saliba as well is outstanding. I mean, I was disappointed, and I wrote it, that he turned down England on many levels. But the fact is that, you know, he is playing so well. I mean, look, Kyle Walker clearly is the best right back in the world at the moment. So he's absolutely gonna start. Probably he's not been at his best in a couple of recent games, but absolutely he will start. But yeah, it's a pity he doesn't want to play for England. But you know, if England go on and do great things this Euros, you know, maybe he'll feel he's missed out. But you know, if he didn't feel he was being used properly or for whatever reason, you know, it's absolutely his choice. But I think it's a pity, and he might look back on it in years to come and regret it. But you know, then again, he might not, particularly if he does incredibly well with Arsenal. But we spoke to Declan Rice about it, and he said, well, he absolutely respected Ben White's decision, but would also have a chat with him, because a player of his caliber on footballing grounds absolutely 100% should be in the England squad.
Yeah, and I think he bust the myth about Mikel Arteta not improving players, because, my goodness, he's improved so greatly since he's arrived at the club. Okay, absolutely well said, Carol. Brilliant show. This conversation is top shelf quality. We always give our guests a closing statement to make before they leave. Paul Buckle, I will start with you. What would you like to leave the squaddies with this evening?
What do I always say when I'm on a tennis court and I'm 30-40 down or 15-40, believe, you know, and keep supporting. Like I said before, just this is, get excited about it. Don't look at the negatives now. Get excited about what you're in and what you're going to go for now, because it's special and you won't be able to get it back. So just go after it and get clear of Liverpool and City tomorrow.
Henry, what is your closing statement to our squaddies?
In marathon terms, Arsenal are at the wall stage, and to get through it, to drive on and to get that trophy, which they can do, it's about belief and it's about the home crowd. It's about making Arsenal, making the Emirates a fortress again, because the home form could be better. And it's about all 60,000 in there, all the home fans, absolutely pouring all their adrenaline, all their love onto the pitch and willing the team home.
Beautifully said. FK, you have the last word, my friend.
Thank you very much. Well, in that case, look, I'm going to hijack the mic just to say something about Henry, actually, if I may. Sophie, you know what it's like to create this sort of content. Mm-hmm. It's really nice to be on the other side of the mic today. But a couple of years ago, I started my channel and Henry Winter was my first ever guest. And I've been lucky now to have been following Henry for a number of years. And I remember DMing you, Henry, sort of saying, look, would you mind helping me out? It's my first show. Very kindly agreed to come on, but Soph, I hadn't familiarized myself with StreamYard, so I had to do the start three times. He was very patient. No one will know this. I logged off and I was sweating and mumbling and, oh my God, Henry's going to like just give up with me. He texted me, calm down, take your time. And then we did it. And I sweated my way through 45 minutes of a video. And my point is that nobody, I don't think any of my sort of followers or viewers will know how much of a class act you were, Henry, that day. It meant the world to me because you helped me set my channel up. And then the second thing is every time I've sort of messaged you and emailed you, you've always been so helpful. And I'm a nobody. I mean, you're in the world. You've got so many distinguished colleagues and whatnot, but you always made time to help me out. And so when I read your news about your job changes and your exciting news today about your new daily column, I just wanted to say I wish you all the very best. You are a top, top man, and I hope you get all the success that you deserve.
That well is really said. Kind. Thank you. But the reason why I wanted to go on your program and your show is because I knew it'd be good, like Sophie's. You know, you get invited on a lot, so you choose the ones that you know are going to be good because you guys are good journalists, good presenters, and, you know, you've got a following. So, yeah, no, thanks for having me on. And I think the first take was the best when we did it.
And I must say as well, my wife speaks super highly of you, Henry, as well. So, and married into a family of journalists. All spoke very highly, and congrats on the marathon.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah. I thought I was going to finish around about now. So I'm just delighted I managed it. But thanks for the kind words. Much appreciated.
Well, next time, maybe we can have Rebecca Lowe on with Henry at the same time. That would be a smashing show. Help us make that happen, Paul. Rebecca, a good friend of the show who's been on quite a few times. We love and adore her. And she's one of my heroes in terms of female broadcasters in general. Absolutely brilliant, you guys. Squaddies, thank you so much for all of your great comments throughout the show. You can find everyone here. Please give a subscribe to Latte Firm. I'm sure that most of you already watch the show. Of course, you can follow Henry here, and Paul is on Instagram. You can follow him here. And thanks to Can't Draw Arsenal Jacob for his art tonight, and also Chemo FC. We send our love to Super Kev as well, who's resting and still recovering. Please continue your good wishes coming our way. And we will be back with a show on Wednesday. Tom Canton and Lee Judges will be joining us for a bit of an Arsenal chat post-Chelsea. And thank you once again, squaddies, and take care. And as Super Kev says, don't forget to tell your loved ones you love them. At ease, everyone, and good night.
Mind the gap between the train and the platform. Please stand clear of the discussion doors. The next stop is Highbury Squad.